The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Recent studies showing 63% of young Americans have no idea that 6 million Jews were murdered in the Holocaust. Emhoff making it clear that it is his mission to fight Holocaust distortion, Holocaust denial, and that he will continue to advocate for Holocaust education.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That is absolutely stunning. It's absolutely stunning. There is an old saying that if, you know, you don't remember your past, of course, you're bound to repeat it. Those numbers should give us all pause. Good afternoon. It is a delight to be here with you today. I'm so grateful for your time. This week in April, it actually brings a very strange convergence of historical events. One is on the Jewish calendar, you got, I don't know the exact word of it. I think it's Yom HaShoah. I don't know how to really say it. And then, which is Holocaust Remembrance Day, happens on the Jewish calendar. It can fall again in April and May. I think it happens. I don't know the other date of it. But the year it starts tonight and goes all the way to tomorrow. This year it starts tonight and goes until tomorrow. And you know, Wednesday, April 19th marks the I think it's the 80th anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, which was when all the Jews in Warsaw tried to oust their Nazi oppressors. And then Thursday, April 20th, is actually Hitler's birthday. So I thought, you know, let's talk about it. Big week, right? There's a lot of stuff coming up here. Let's take a look at the Holocaust. 80 years. 80 years. Unfortunately for us, you know, I think a lot of people are starting to forget the reality of the Holocaust, as you just heard in that piece of audio that Maggie queued up there. 10 years ago, there was a school in Rialto, California. They assigned an 8th grade class to debate if the Holocaust was real. And I quote, merely a political scheme or a political scheme created to influence public emotion and gain wealth. What? They had a debate. Was the Holocaust real or was it a political scheme created to influence the public emotion and gain wealth? Yeah, there's a lot of this garbage on the web right now. I know a 20-some-year-old kid I bumped into. We were having a conversation, and the stuff he's saying was almost anti-Semitic. And I think we're seeing a rise of anti-Semitism today, too. And I'm thinking, who's putting this up, and how are you getting contaminated with it, right? Why are 8th graders debating this, right? Teach them history. Teach them history. Don't have them debate whether it was a political scheme. But that showed exactly why we're having some real problems, I think, with our public memory. And this is one of the darkest chapters, I think, in human history. It was a horror what took place. If you're deliberately confusing kids when you debate the reality of what happened rather than just teaching the facts, we got a real problem. It's deeply anti-Semitic to call remembrance of Holocaust a political scheme. And you should be outraged. If your kids are going through this, I would say something to you, the educator. You know, a lot of people don't know about it. A lot of people believe the Holocaust happened just because one man, Adolf Hitler, right? But there was a lot more complexity to what triggered the Holocaust than just Adolf Hitler. There had to be a change, if you think about this, in the mindset of the German people. How does a people think that this is okay, right? I mean, how do you arrive at that point? So think about that for a minute. There had to be a change. I saw it in Rwanda too. It's like, how can an ethnicity like the Hutus think it's okay just to massacre their fellow man with machetes, hunt them down over a period of days, and kill hundreds of thousands of them in gruesome ways? What happens to the human psyche? So with the Holocaust, I believe there was a mindset of the German people that there was a trip there. There was a trigger. It changed and had them accept that eliminating the Jews was really the final solution to all the problems that Germany was facing. And, of course, it doesn't change overnight, especially with one guy. I want to talk about this aspect of it with my next guest, Dr. Dan McMillan. He spent nearly 4 decades on a journey to understand the what I call a multifaceted answer to really a wrenching question. How could something as horrific as the Holocaust have happened? And how can this happen? And his search to find an explanation has taken him across several different countries, through the halls of many universities, to countless specialized studies in the pursuit of truth. And he wrote a book, and this is probably good for your library. It's called How Could This Happen? It's a groundbreaking book, and it brings together various pieces of the puzzle. So we should never and can never forget why or how this happened, and work to make sure it never does happen again. And it's a pleasure to have with me today, Dr. Dan McMillan. Doctor, thank you for your work. I'm delighted to have you here today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Drew. I really appreciate you.
This is, first, your work's important. I think we're seeing a rise in the culture even today. Before we talk about the history of how the Holocaust began, are you seeing in any of the research that you're doing a rise in this anti-Semitic belief or behavior in the culture? And if so, what's triggering it?
Well, I can't say that I've really been studying contemporary anti-Semitism in these last years. Particularly, on the other hand, I think it's always worth asking why anti-Semitism is, I think, really the most persistent prejudice, the most widespread prejudice around the world. I mean, in all kinds of countries around the world, there are disfavored minorities, but hostility toward Jews and also Holocaust denial is a worldwide phenomenon. And that's a very important question. I think that as far as why Holocaust denial is so widespread, part of it, I think, is that it is very, the causes of the Holocaust are so complex, it can be very difficult to get them across in a matter that is compressed enough. Yeah. That reasonable people can absorb. However, yeah. after 5 decades of working on this, I think I've actually sorted something out that I think will be helpful and a lot easier for everyone. I mean, my book sort of does, I think, covers the full range, not of every single cause, but really of all the major causes I think historians have recognized, and pulls them together into a comprehensive essay that's really quite brief, that you can get through in 5 or 6 hours, and that I wrote to be as accessible as possible. And I think it is very accessible, but even that story, the whole book, is too much to take in even an interview that's an hour long, much less a half an hour. But let me emphasize, I think what I've come to see is really the most important thing we need to understand. It happened above all because the people who did it saw no reason whatsoever to not do it, and that is to say because among the ruling class of our most advanced society in that decade, human life lost all value whatsoever. I mean, up till, obviously, in every war and every genocide, killers dehumanize their victims. Yep. Human life gets cheapened. But in the Holocaust, it was total. The most extreme expression of this dehumanization was the way they targeted the Jewish people, because the Jews were the only large ethnic group in history to be targeted for complete biological extinction. They saw them effectively as a virus that you want to stamp out everywhere. But it is also true that they killed about 7 million Gentiles, including 3 million Soviet POWs and 2 million Poles, 200,000 Germans with disabilities, simply because it was convenient. And if we could go back in time and ask these people, we would be so anguished. We'd say, why in heaven's name are you doing something so cruel? And these men would shrug their shoulders and say to us, why not? They're just people. And this, I think, is why the Holocaust is the only historical event that frightens us. And because it frightens us, I think that is why it's the only historical event that people want to deny. And then how exactly human life lost all its meaning, that is an additional step in the argument. But well, let's
talk about it there. No, I feel free to take the ball and run with it. I'm fascinated. But let's do a little history here. We'll go back in time. I mean, the Holocaust, my understanding, was the culmination of a Nazi ideology, right? It held that the Aryan race was superior to all other people. So you're right. Human life was cheapened. People viewed others at a different level, especially Jews. They were almost subhuman, and a threat to the German nation at the time. And then At the same time, you got to look at what was going on politically in Europe, which is complex as well. Long history of anti-Semitism in Europe, as well as the rise of the fascist and these totalitarian regimes in the aftermath of the First World War. And then you have Hitler and the Nazi Party capitalizing on the economic turmoil, right? The political instability of Germany. They seized power in 93 and then began implementing these policies, not just to isolate, but then to persecute the Jews. Was it an evolution like this that ultimately led up to it? What was the political climate of the day, the loss of respect for your fellow man? Was it a confluence of all these things that opened the door to the Holocaust?
I think a good way to kind of sort it out, to kind of get an overview and clarity, I group the causes of the Holocaust in two groups.
Okay.
One group is sort of all the causes that help us understand why Germans were the killers and Jews were the targets. And you have to understand the sort of dysfunctional way the German political system developed already going back to the 1860s, the impact of the First World War, the profound divisions within German society, class divisions and religious divisions, and so on, the whole political history that made possible the rise of Hitler and so on. And that's very important, and that takes up about two-thirds of my book. But I think what happens when we try to explain the Holocaust is people drown in those details.
Yeah.
The other group of causes are the three causes that really best help us understand why human life lost all value. And briefly, those are first, just the staggering loss of life in the First World War, 10 million young men killed on the field of battle.
Wow.
It just lowered the threshold for violence. It made killing millions of people for political reasons seem an ordinary fact of life. Adolf Hitler spent 4 years on the Western Front in World War II, and it was that experience that made him a killer. The second factor is social Darwinist racism, a way of thinking about the human race that was specific to that time, very different from our time, was seen as scientific fact. People simplistically applied Darwin's theory of evolution to human society in ways that we now recognize are intellectually bankrupt, but that then were accepted, including accepted by the elite of our own society, of Britain, France, of everywhere in the Western world. And there were two terrible implications there. One was they believed that every ethnic group, Germans, Italians, Jews, Poles, and so on, was itself its own race, you know, separate. Not a single human race, but a whole panoply of separate races in an elaborate hierarchy of values, some worth a lot more than others, because each race had developed further or not as far from the apes and in different ways. And that opens the door to saying that some races are of little value and others of no value at all. The other thing that was terrible about social Darwinist racism, and this is, again, you know, the leaders of our country and many other countries, of all the European colonial powers, that history is really a Darwinian struggle between races for survival, and that in wars, unfit races are exterminated and fit races flourish, and that this is not something to deplore, it's something to celebrate, because it contributes to the improvement of the gene pool and the betterment of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, it wasn't just the Germans. People, for example, when we launched basically a war of aggression against Spain in 1898 and took the Philippines as a colony, our argument was, and the Filipinos rebelled against us, and we killed a lot of civilians to suppress that rebellion. We said, look, they are not of a self-governing race. They are not, they don't really have these rights. We have the right to this territory because we are a better race and we must flourish. And Hitler was the leader who took this essentially violent thinking to its most extreme conclusion. And his whole idea in the war was that he was going to destroy the Soviet Union, annex all of European Russia, and in that way expand Germany in with farmland and natural resources and make Germany such a gigantic industrial powerhouse that it would be invulnerable to attack from other countries in the Darwinian struggle of survival among nations. And that end justified every means and justified the taking of any life when it was convenient to serve this larger end. And the final factor is the hardest for people to get their minds around, and that is that Nazi Germany was a political system unique in history. It was the only political system where the legitimacy of the government came not from any principle like, say, democracy or divine right monarchy, but rather from a belief in the magical qualities of a superhuman leader. You know, this myth about Hitler and about Hitler being essentially superhuman or even supernatural in his abilities, in Hitler having a connection to divine providence, which he said about himself and which a lot of his people believed, that came in part from how desperate they were when he came to office in 33, and then a long string of victories that he got, mostly through dumb luck, but the people could not see that. But the long and the short of the consequence of that was that Hitler was seen as this man of destiny who shaped the course of history and who himself was the source of all law and morality in Germany. Anything that Hitler did or commanded was, by definition, could not be seen as illegal or immoral. And that unique position of Hitler in this unique political system dissolved, broke down moral and legal norms. Hitler operated in a norm-free space, and so too did all the men who carried out his commands. And that third factor complied with the first two. It was one made possible this absolute moral nihilism and absolute negation of the value of our lives.
Doctor, let me ask you too about what was happening, if there are parallels to what we saw pre-rise of, let's say, Nazism and the Holocaust to our own day, because I understand abortion was pretty rampant at that day, but so was some of this. So were some of these sexual issues that we're seeing today. They were somewhat manifesting. Am I accurate in that?
Let's see. I'm actually not as well informed about that as I should be. It is true. I think in the 1920s, I don't know. I have to say I don't really see a strong connection there.
Well, let me ask you this then.
Okay.
Do you think that we could see another Holocaust today? Do you think that there is a groundwork in terms of disrespect for the human person today? And there are other, let's say, political factions, the deep division in our countries over ideology that could, I could never see, you know, to me, it's unimaginable that a concentration camp could be erected. But then I look at the Uyghurs over in China and I see what's happening to these people, COVID camps in China. You take a look at some of the things that have different names today. And again, I'm just throwing this out.
It's very relevant, Drew, because I think one thing that the Holocaust showed us is that the value we place on human life is something that we can never take for granted because it is fragile and it can be destroyed. That said, I think that in really in any of the world's first world countries, including ours, I find the idea of another genocide almost inconceivable. I think that we have made too much moral progress since 1945. I think we value human life much more highly. I understand that.
Are you saying that globally, or are you just saying that in terms of the United States of America?
I'm really talking about first world countries. I'm talking about us, Germany, Canada, all of our friends and allies. Okay. Now, on the other hand, China, which I don't think of as a first world country, is perpetrating genocide against the Uyghurs. Right. I think the value they place on human rights and human life that the Chinese Communist Party places is very low. I also think, frankly, I look at the overpopulated, undernourished parts of the third world, of Latin America, Sub-Saharan Africa, Greater Middle East, a lot of South Asia, where the governments are all basket cases, hopelessly corrupt, where population growth has already outrun the carrying capacity of the land, where the supply of food and water is already inadequate. And then you have all the extreme weather events, the drought and floods. And I think that the potential in those parts of the world for famine, war, and genocide is absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
I don't like to think about it because it's hard to sleep at night. That said, I think it is important also to emphasize, nonetheless, that we in the most advanced societies, and this is very true of the Germans, who really confront their own past in a very brave and honest way, we have learned enough. We have, in fact, become more decent than we were 60 or 80 years ago. I mean, just think in this country about how much less discrimination there is, racial discrimination or gender discrimination, than 60 years ago. I still believe we have further progress we must make. But in that way, for example, we have become a much kinder and more decent society. And I think it's important not to forget our progress, because being pessimistic about our future doesn't make disasters less likely. It makes them more likely, because then you give up.
Yeah, I like that. It's a very helpful message. I find it unimaginable that man could ever devolve to what we saw during the Holocaust today in our civilized culture. I saw, Rwanda took place in 1994, and again, that's not first world, as you point out. Yeah. So there are differences. Are there things we can do to make sure that this never takes place again? How can we ensure that such atrocities don't happen?
Well, I think the most important things to do are to promote democratic governance, because democracies don't commit genocide. People are not going to vote for mass murder.
Right.
And the other is to avoid major war. And, despite what, Putin is doing in Ukraine, actually, there's a lot, wars of aggression are actually less frequent and on a much smaller scale than they were, say, during World War II. In that regard also, although there is still plenty of warfare and civil war around the world, even, in the Third World, there has the concept of human rights and the understanding that peace is so desirable has kind of spread throughout the entire world. There are parts of the world that I talked about, these parts of the Third World. Mm-hmm. I see those people as being at terrible risk. I fear for them. But even there, I see progress. Altogether, there's so much pessimism in the world today, and particularly in our country, because our political system is so damaged by big money, which is actually what I work on now. I have a political organization that works on that, but yeah. I don't want to get us off topic. But despite that, and so there's pessimism, but as a professional historian, taking the long view, I feel two things I've learned about human beings. One is that it is essential to our nature to desire progress, to want to become better, because that's, as a devout Christian, a belief in our moral perfection or an aspiration to that is at the core of all the world's great religions.
Amen.
And also that it is essential to human nature to want to be free, which is why every authoritarian system, every dictatorship will eventually fail, and why the only form of government that can endure long-term is the democratic form of government.
Yeah,
and for those reasons, I'm very optimistic about our long-term future.
Yeah, our founding fathers certainly had that vision. They understood how
important. They were quite right about that. They were brilliant.
They certainly were. Well, I'm very grateful for your time.
Grateful to you. Thank you.
For your writing. If people want to check out your article or follow what you're doing, what's the best way to do that?
Okay, for my political project to kind of get big money out of politics, which, by the way, is I'm really getting a lot of support on both sides of the aisle. This is a great way for Americans to come together against a corrupt system that's hurting all of us. My organization is called Save Democracy in America. The website URL, unfortunately, is long. It's savedemocracyinamerica.org.
That's not that bad. That's easy to remember.
Okay.
We should have you back to talk about that.
And I hope that people would check it out, because I think they'll like what I'm doing.
Doctor, we'll have to have you back to talk about that. I think it's a great conversation.
I love that.
Before we do, though, let me grab a quick call. I have a couple minutes here.
Okay.
I want to go to Buckfield, Maine. Maciek is on the line. He's got a point for you. Hi, Maciek. Good afternoon.
Hello. Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. It's a very interesting conversation I'm listening to right now. And I come from the country that experienced, my grandfather was fighting during the World War. Then he was taken by the Soviets and put in a camp, and then he had to escape and go to Poland. So I think I'm unfortunately not personally, but my family experienced a lot of problems with the totalitarianism. And obviously my family, I'm listening to the Catholic radio. I love your show, and I'm Catholic, and I just wanted to mention a couple of little points. First of all, that what we know as Holocaust wasn't just the Jews. My family was Catholic, and actually on the beginning of the war, the Germans were prosecuting Poles more than the Jews, because they considered them more of a threat. So Polish people would put the Star of David on their arm just to survive, because otherwise they'd be prosecuted. Yep. So I just wanted to make sure that it's just not exclusively the Jews who unfortunately suffered.
No, of course.
But also people from other religions, just who happened to be there, and they were considered by the Germans as like the subhumans, as Hitler wrote in his Mein Kampf, that like all the Slavs are just like pretty much made for work. So maybe some of them, they can survive, but they should never finish like more than eighth grade education. Mm-hmm. They should just work. And, you know, so that's one thing I wanted to tell. And another thing is just like that you did mention that the democracy is the solution for that. And unfortunately, I think it's not true, because as a lot of people forget, and I think everybody should remember about it, Hitler was democratically elected leader.
Not really.
Voted for him. You know, no, it wasn't exactly. Like he just overthrown the government and he, you know, they wanted him. They wanted that. And talking about today's
Maciek,
society.
Hold the thought. I'll tell you what. I'm up against the clock here. Hold the thought for one second. When we come back, I'm going to let you finish your point. And doctor, perhaps you can respond to them as well. To his first point, which I think is great, he's absolutely right. A lot of Catholics died, a lot of philosophers, a lot of intellectuals, not just Jews died. And that's a misconception that's out there. 6 million European Jews lost their lives during the Second World War, but there were a lot of others that were swept up in that horror as well. When we come back, let's pick up on Hitler's rise and to Maciek's point that he was democratically elected. And should that give us pause today? Could we still see something like this? My guest today, Dr. Dan McMillan, we'll talk about that. I got a lot of other things to get into, so stay with us. Very short pause here. Our conversation continues. You can call in too if you want. 888-914-9149.
Hey, today we'd like to thank Jim, who's listening to us in Missouri, for donating his Ford Mustang. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Real faith, real talk. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Good. So good to be with you. It really is. And, one of the things I love is history. I think we can learn a lot from it. I believe you can see the fingerprints of God on the human heart. There have been some great heroes. There's been some great horrors as well. Today, if you're just joining, we were taking a look at the 80th anniversary of the Holocaust, how it began, how a people could accept something as gruesome as this, what led to it, ultimately what ended it as well. I've invited Dr. Dan McMillan, who holds his PhD in German history from Columbia University, law degree from Fordham as well, and has worked as a history professor and a prosecuting attorney. So he's a great author, too. He wrote a book, How Could This Happen? It's a groundbreaking book, and he looks at the various pieces of the puzzle in a way that will really paint a picture for you that you probably have not heard or seen. Spent a long, long time researching this. That book is available, How Could This Happen, on Amazon, so you can check it out there. We're talking right now with Maciek from Buckfield, Maine, and he raises a couple quick points. His first one, very legitimate one. Hey, most people think that the Holocaust only targeted Jews. That was not the case. As we know, this horrible ideology, it included targeting intellectuals, it included Catholics, the Romani people, disabled individuals, the gays, a whole lot of different homosexuals at the time, a whole lot of different people were swept up in this. But back to his final point, if we could, Professor, democracy. Yes. Maciek is arguing the fact that, wait a minute, you're saying that we have a democracy will protect, perhaps, people from going down this path. He's saying that Hitler was democratically elected.
And that is often said, and it's a misconception. First of all, German democracy had been dead for a good 2 years before Hitler was appointed prime minister in January 1933. It was effectively governed by emergency decree from President Hindenburg, who was determined to destroy the democratic system and did a lot of that. In the last free elections in November of 1932, the Nazis did get the highest vote total. They were the largest party, but they still had only 33% of the vote. So they never won a majority, but because they were the largest party and also because Hindenburg was afraid that their paramilitaries, the brown shirts, might rise in rebellion and that the army might not be able to control it. Probably for that reason also, Hitler and other Hindenburg and other conservatives let Hitler be the prime minister, form a government, thinking that they could control him for their purposes, but they turned out to be wrong. The other thing to recognize is that even, let's say for the sake of argument, that Germans in their majority had voted to elect Hitler, they didn't vote for genocide. In fact, anti-Semitism wasn't even a major campaign theme for the Nazi Party in the elections of 1930 and 1932. Everyone knew they were viciously anti-Semitic, and you can criticize those Germans for voting for a movement that was so anti-Semitic, but no one had any idea at that point in time that this would ever lead to mass murder. So I think that my point stands. In a democracy, you're not going to get a majority of citizens to vote for murder. And what we have in our history had strong majorities in our southern states voting for segregation and for horrible discrimination, but not for genocide. And you had asked me, how do we prevent further genocides? And I think preventing wars and promoting democracy around the world are kind of the two most important things we can do.
All right. Well said. Let's grab another call or two if we could.
That'd be terrific.
Angela is in Phoenix, Arizona. Maciek, by the way, thank you for your call. Thanks for listening. I appreciate the talking points there. Angela, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to comment on your statement about the sexual degeneracy that was taking place in Weimar Germany and to the lead up of the Holocaust. I think it's important that we also mention that, and I wanted to ask your guest if he was familiar with Magnus Hirschfeld and his research in promoting homosexuality and transgenderism in Germany, which was also something that Germans were very upset with, and he was also, I think, involved in pedophilia as well.
Wow, fascinating.
Well, I'm not aware of Hirschfeld being involved in pedophilia. He was a gay man, to use today's terminology, and he did have an institute for the study of sexuality. However, I think it's pretty hard to argue that, it's tricky here for me because I personally don't regard that as sexual degeneracy. I don't have a problem with it myself, but we don't need to get into that. But it's kind of hard to argue that sort of sexual experimentation, shall we call it, led to the Holocaust, because if anything, well, the reaction against it or the desire to stamp it out was something that added in a small way to the support that the Nazis got. It wasn't as if Magnus Hirschfeld said anything that made the murder of the Jews more likely. So I think that's kind of a stretch. I don't really see a good causal connection there.
Angela, do you want to follow up?
No, I just know that people bring up the Nazi book burning, and when in truth, I guess they were burning books that were related to Magnus Hirschfeld's research in transgenderism and homosexuality and prostitution, pedophilia. So I know that was a concern of Germans.
You're not alone. I heard the same thing. I had heard that same point. Angela, thank you for the call. Professor, thank you for being here as well. I'm grateful. I know we'd only keep you for a few more moments. If people want to get your book, again, Amazon, you're saying, is the best way to get a hold of that?
Yeah, How Could This Happen? Explaining the Holocaust. It was published several years ago, so it's not in bookstores anymore, but it's on Amazon.
Sounds great. Well, Professor, thank you. Keep up your good work.
Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate the conversation. It's Professor Dan McMillan, and you can check out his book on Amazon. I will grab another call or two, and you can join me here, 888-914-9149. We got a lot to get into coming up here. One of the points that I'd like to go ahead and I guess bring just a little bit of clarity on is what he said about degeneracy. When it comes to homosexuality, the act itself, there's many people who have same-sex attractions. It's the act that is disordered. That's what the church teaches. It's not being gay, that makes you a degenerate. That's not it. It's when you close the door to life, and when you, it's the act itself that's being engaged in that the church says, hey, that's wrong. So I want to bring clarity to that. I don't want to let that fly, over the air here as we address this issue. Church is very clear teaching on homosexuality. We've talked about it a million times on the air here. And you can, of course, check that out. But, you know, in terms of the book burning, I had heard what our last caller had said. And, you know, I also know that Hitler had targeted not just Jews, but Catholics and those with certain sexual preferences as well. So, but again, you can check out the professor's book, read what he had to say, and can certainly go from there. In fact, a lot to get into. I want to take another call or two for you here, and then we'll move along. I only have a few moments left in the show today. I'll tell you, the time just absolutely flies. Let me go to Mike in Clearwater, Florida. Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. I'm very glad to talk to you. I listen to your show all the time and enjoy it. I wondered, I was going to ask your guest if he had read Salvation is from the Jews by Roy Schumann. And I was curious as to whether you had ever had Roy Schumann on your show. He addresses the Holocaust quite eloquently in his book.
I have, and I think my producer, my call screener, asked your question. He did not, he was not aware of Roy Schumann, and Professor Schumann's been on the air. He wrote a couple different books. He's got a powerful conversion story. And
he does, yes. Honey is from the Rock, and
Salvation's
from the Jews. Yeah. It really affected my life a lot when I read his, and I watched him on YouTube too. You know, his conversion story and stuff.
Yeah, he had
it was very moving.
You were asking, I think they were saying to me that about Hitler's obsession with the occult.
The occult, the eugenics. Roy said that the SS initiation was an occult initiation. Yeah. You know, his stormtroopers.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And he was.
Yeah, it is interesting. I'll tell you what. Let me do this. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, Mike, I'll pick up on that. I know a little bit about Hitler's fascination with the occult. He was haunted. I really believe. Well, first of all, like in Rwanda, I really believe there was a demonic presence that took place. In order to kill human beings the way you do, to have that disrespect, there was something dark and spiritual going on there. When I come back, I'll talk a little bit about Adolf Hitler and his fascination with the occult. We'll get into that and much more. It's just the final segment of the show, so stay with me. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Wish you could hit rewind on that convo? Listen to the podcast on relevantradio.com or anywhere podcasts can be found.
Hey, I did a quick search for the catechism number for you before we get back to the calls. If you want to understand what the church teaches regarding chastity, it goes for heterosexuals as well as those who are homosexual. Here's the entry. It's 2357. Start reading there, you'll make your way through. Very telling. I'm going to quote this very quickly. Then I want to talk about the occult, and I'll take a few of your calls too. Maybe your grandparents or your parents lived through the Holocaust and you want to share your story. I'd love to hear that too. Homosexuality refers to a relationship between men and between women who experience exclusive predominant sexual attraction towards the same sex. And here's what the church says. Tradition has always declared the homosexual acts are intrinsically disordered. They're contrary to natural law. They close the sexual act to the gift of life. They don't proceed from a genuine, effective, and sexual complementarity. Under no circumstances can they be approved. Now, the inclination, which is objectively disorder, constitutes for most a trial. They must be accepted with respect, compassion, sensitivity, and every sign of unjust discrimination in their regard should be avoided. If you have same-sex attraction, right, it says these persons are called to fulfill God's will in their lives. And if they're Christians, unite to the sacrifice of the Lord on the cross, the difficulties they may encounter from their condition. It says the homosexual person is called to chastity. And by virtue of self-mastery that teaches them inner freedom, at times support of disinterested friendship, and by prayer and sacramental grace, they can and should gradually and resolutely approach Christian perfection. That goes for all of us. If you're in a single state of life, you can't be engaging in these type of acts either. But I think the church is really clear. Catechism of the Catholic Church, you need a Bible, you need a Catholic, you need a catechism. Those are two musts for your spiritual library. I would throw in the Diary of St. Faustina and a lot of other books too. Maybe we should talk about what book should be in your spiritual library another day, but because time is short for me, I want to address the Michael's call regarding the Nazis. And this is I don't know whether there's historical evidence for this or not, but what I have read, what I understand is that, look, we know that the Nazis killed millions, but I think very few realize that the occult was at the very root of their terror. The symbolism there, I remember hearing a talk one time about the swastika, the sun sign. It's a magical emblem that goes back thousands of years, and it can be traced to ancient Mesopotamia. The Egyptians had it. You'll find it in India and Greece and China. And even the ancient North American Indians had that symbol. And that always gave me pause. I wondered why. What was it? Could a force that is supernatural inspire diverse cultures at great distances? Have that broken cross, so to speak? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out at you. In Northern Europe, the swastika represented the hammer of a god called Thor and was used also by the very savage Vikings. It was also employed by magicians in the 19th and 20th centuries. And among these was an Austrian. His name was George Lanz von Liebenfels. And he raised it as a banner over the castle headquarters of an occult group called the Order of the New Templars. So von Liebenfels, he lived in Vienna, had a profound effect on another resident of the city. Guess who that was? Adolf Hitler. And Hitler studied preternatural disciplines. He looked at dark, you know, strictures of theology, he dove into the occult. Let me put it this way. I don't want to spend too much time diving into Hitler's background, but Hitler, I really believe, was an occultist. And like many who dabble or practice the black arts, I think Hitler was possessed. There's a strong indication that he was possessed by demons. It might have been ever since he was young. They say when he gave a speech, it was amazing, his ability to deliver. He was enchanting is a word people use. They were captivated. They were held in trance almost. Some wondered if he might have been personally, Hitler could have been a victim of ritual abuse. He was Catholic. Did you know Hitler was Catholic? During his Catholic confirmation ceremony, he was at the cathedral in Linz. Hitler turned, they say, very sulky, very surly, very angry. He was repulsed by the whole ritual. Could that have been the spirit in him? I'm just throwing this out. But he developed an aversion to Christianity, which he later wanted to eliminate. And you heard our earlier caller talk about how, you know, a lot of Catholics were rounded up. As a boy, they say that Adolf Hitler was prone to very satanic trances and that he would turn pale and have a sinister countenance. And he'd launch into these impassioned speeches with a hoarse and raucous voice. And, of course, we know what would happen later. He had this mesmerizing charisma. What was it about Adolf Hitler where he was imbued with what was really a fantastic, mesmerizing, charisma, personality, I don't know the right word. Too often, charisma comes from the dark side, this type of thing. A lot of people make these deals with the devil, right? We see it in rock stars. You see it in Hollywood. You see it in others that quite often go down a very dark and sinister path. When he gave a speech, they said it was as if though another being was speaking right out of his body. It moved. People said there was one. I remember reading a report one time about somebody who was in the audience, and they said it moved him. You know, and it wasn't the case with all the speakers, but there was something about his words, something. I would listen to this person say with astonishment and emotion to what burst forth from it was like an elementary force was speaking. He says it was hard to kind of describe. But a similar trance occurred when Hitler was recovering from war injuries in the Prussian military reserve. There he said he heard voices that told him that he was Germany's Messiah. And those voices told him to exterminate the Jews. Hitler was also obsessed with the Nordic god Woden. And he's a god of destruction. And he ultimately, and I won't spend too much more time on this, but he exhibited very clear signs of demonic infestation. And there was a pope who tried to do a long-distance exorcism on him. I think he had probably a full-fledged possession. He had an obsession with blood. with you know, he was fascinated by precognition, the ability to see certain future events, demonism, really, to be very honest with you. True prophecy comes from God. Counterfeit prophecy can come from Satan. And they say Hitler's move would turn in a flash. I mean, boom, it would he'd snap. And he walked as though propelled by like an invisible force. His face, as I said, often sinister, but frequently he'd enter into what seemed like a rapture and ecstasy. And he'd wake up screaming at times in his room in the middle of the night. People there would say that he saw a shadow in his room. In fact, one night in 1934, Hitler awakened. He let out this murderous shriek. And when they crashed into his bedchamber to find out what was going on, they said he was standing in one place, swaying back and forth, his eyes looking wildly around the room. And sweat was pouring off his face, and he was gasping for air. By the end, in 1941, with the eradication of the Jews now in full progress, the Holocaust, in some respects, some say, in terms of was a massive satanic rite. And I never thought about this until I read this once. They said the Holocaust was a burnt offering. And who was the sacrifice? It was the Jews. It was the Catholics. It was all the people that went through those death chambers. Millions were shot and gassed and starved. Another 44 million died in the war itself. And it made it one of the greatest human disasters up to that point in history. And among the first targets were Christians. Even the Pope himself, you remember, was directly threatened for offering sanctuary to the Jews. But really what possessed Hitler, my final thought is this. Some of the people that were his counselors were astrologers. What possessed Hitler, I had to possess the people too. I mean, how can these guards, how can the SS, how can those who work in concentration camps do what they did? This god Wooten, was a god of war. Hitler lost the war, committed suicide, right, with Eva Braun. Guess when he died? Did you know the time? He died at 3, they say between 3 and 3:30 p.m. It's the hour of divine mercy. That's the hour, on April 30th, 1945. So I hope he sought forgiveness. You know, God's outside of time. You can certainly pray for Adolf Hitler. But clearly, there was something dark, something sinister in his life. If I have time, I'll share with you why he had a fascination with the Spear of Longinus. That's another one. And the events that happened around the spear, pretty amazing stuff. But first, let me go to the phones. I know a lot of people have been holding. Marianne is in Lincoln, Nebraska. Hi, Marianne. Good afternoon.
Oh, Drew, it's so good to talk to you. I'm calling you because I want to pay homage to both my parents. They were both a little nervous here. They were both Holocaust survivors. They were in the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp, and my father was captured because he was a soldier. And my mother would tell me stories that in her little village, the Nazis, the first thing that they did was they captured anybody that had any sort of an education so that they could leave the people defenseless and without a leader. And they would capture the priests, the nuns, the teachers, anybody in authority. And the story about my mother that I really want to share with you is, she said that, you know, they coexisted with the Jews, that there were Jews in her village and they coexisted and everything was okay. And but what happened was the Nazis came in and they built a ghetto where they kept the Jews. One day, my mother was so hungry, she saw a crow with a piece of bread in its mouth, in its beak. She prayed that the crow would drop the bread so she could eat it. Yeah. And the crow did drop the bread. She picked the bread up, and then there's an arm that came out of the Jewish ghetto and grabbed the bread from her hand. And a Nazi soldier saw that, and he said to her, "If you want to feed the Jews, you can live with the Jews."
Oh, no.
He went and shoved her into the ghetto. The next day, she was on a train to Bergen-Belsen, and she said the train was so crowded that they actually had to take turns sitting down.
Wow.
And she had never seen her family. She spent the next four or five years, you know, in this labor camp, hard labor camp. And she was 19 years old when that happened.
Lord. What a horror. Oh, my gosh. It's yeah. unbelievable stories. But thank God for his protection over her. She must have, I hope you recorded a lot of what she had to say. And if you haven't, please do that. You know, make sure this is all documented. It's a piece of history that I often wish I did.
On her deathbed, she was saying, actually, this is like a few months before she died. She said, you know, every morning I get up and there's all these little kids around my bed. Uh-huh. And they're all speaking Polish and they're all singing these little songs, you know, the little lullabies and whatnot that she grew up with. And it was like she never had a childhood. She had a very hard life. She worked on a farm and it was a very hard life. And then she got taken away when she was 19 and lived through the atrocities of the Second World War. And it was like they were saying, okay, Bernice, you know, you can come home now.
Oh, that's so sweet. So many people who approached, you know, the threshold between this life and the next, our true one. They're often visited by angels or saints or maybe mysterious visitors like that. Marianna, your mother deserves paradise, that's for sure. And I know one day you'll be with her. Thank you for sharing a beautiful story, reaccounting really what happened. You know, from a human perspective, the Holocaust really is a reminder of the need to uphold the dignity of every human person and working towards a very just world.